little bit after 8:30. Welcome to the WLBB Community Voice on News Talk 1330 FM 106.3. Streaming live online at newstalk1330.com. And this morning we're on the News Talk 1330 WLBB Facebook page. You can see my handsome young guests, whom I'll introduce you to in just a second. I did tease this program a little bit yesterday. Talked about we're bringing back that dirty C word, COVID. But it's a good story. We'll talk about that here in the program. First of all, just so I don't forget, let's give away $100 for one last time this week. The random Christmas trivia cash giveaway question. I'm going to ask you this question. We know the answer. Visit our website, newstalk1330.com. Find the random Christmas trivia banner. Enter your name, email, phone, and your answer. Then one entry from the correct answer today will be picked at random. And this is the final day. You're going to win $100 once we pick that right one. Then tomorrow, December 16th, one of our 12 daily winners, along with a 13th winner selected at random that morning, so you want to show up, we'll have a chance to turn that $100 into $1,000 at a live remote broadcast at the Amp on Bradley Street in Carrollton. The final question is, in the 1964 TV special Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, who travels by iceberg to the land of misfit toys? Ah, special memory. Newstalk1330.com and fill that out. Now, my guests, as I have them identified here, sitting to my left, Mark Buchanan of Roopville, is what I have, and we'll tell that story a little bit. We have Dr. Ronick. She specializes in critical care, internal medicine, pulmonary medicine, and sleep medicine. And Dr. Laura Larson. She is a medical director of infection prevention for Tanner Health System. We were talking a little bit before the show. This is the first time she's actually been in studio in several years. We had you. It's like you were probably the most common face on our program. Over the last three or four years. Yeah, it was just your still picture up there. So as we talked about COVID, luckily we're out of that, but 4 years ago this month, we determined that that's when COVID really started, started peaking a little bit. It was a little discussed in certain areas, but we didn't really pay too much attention until February of March of the next year. This morning is a story about a gentleman, a healthy man, who did receive COVID, and I'm interested to know how seriously you took COVID before you received it, but before you got it. He had a lung transplant. We're going to talk about the journey he's taken and the doctors who helped him. Had to go all the way down to Florida after I think a lot of people had given up on his survival. But again, Mark Buchanan. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
I'm going to have to get closer to that mic, if you don't mind. Tell us your story. Mark from Roopville and works for Georgia Power. What else you got, Mark?
Originally from Carrollton. I graduated from Carrollton in 85. I guess July, late July, 1st of August of 2020, I worked for Georgia Power at that time. I was still retired now, but.
Did you get COVID from Bart Cater?
No, I did not. He's from Bowden, so you got to keep him down that way. But no, Georgia Power, they brought in all the hand sanitizers, everything, masks and everything. So they separated us to like 2 million per truck so we wouldn't, be around a group of people, and they staggered their times for us to come in where we couldn't, be around other people. So they took precautions before, but also, you got to look at your household and what they're doing and, how they were preventing it or who they were around. So I don't know how I contacted it. At the time, my son had it, and I don't know if I got it from him or if I got it from somewhere else. So.
But everybody in your family ended up with it, right? And yes. But you just apparently got it worse.
Yes, Melissa had it also at the time, my wife.
I think we're going to talk a lot about Melissa here because apparently she busted her hump to help you out a lot as well. So we need to give her some kudos this morning.
That's right. She had it when I had it, and I was in the hospital, but she had it pretty rough, and I think she got some stuff at home to help her while I was in the hospital. So, because she couldn't come see me, because of COVID restrictions.
Well, take us through that. How that happened. You just one day you feel sick and say, oh, I probably have it. How'd you test?
Well, I got several nieces and a nephew that's RNs at Tanner, and I didn't feel good. And I said, well, maybe I should just go down and get a chest x-ray, make sure, they said, please don't let nothing set up pneumonia. So when I did, I went down and they done a chest x-ray and everything. And the hospitalist said, hey, you need to stay overnight for observation. You got COVID. And so that was the start of it.
And again, we believe that you were a healthy cat.
I weighed about 245 pounds and, worked outside daily. And I was strong. I was healthy.
Is there any determination, any suggestion on why? It was worse for him than anybody else in his family?
No, not for Mark. He wasn't the typical stereotypic patient that did poorly. You know?
So he went to Tanner first. And, I mean, when does he get to meet Dr. Larson?
At that point, early on, we were typically in infectious diseases seeing most of the people in the ICU are people with co-infections. The hospitalists were really taking a lot of work and taking care. You know, we had protocols driven for what we were doing. We were meeting every week, every sometimes more than that, mm-hmm. with pulmonary and critical care and the hospitalists on how we were managing patients because it was changing so rapidly. So, you know, it was usually we ended up seeing the sickest of the sick or things that were complicated. And in Mark's case, yeah, I was definitely involved in his care early. And I knew him from before, too, as a patient.
That's right. I think you told me that. Yeah. That he
yeah.
Had answered, but, yeah. But, yeah, I mean, can you guys reflect on that time, just how busy that was, how insane it was? And I did kind of ask you this earlier. I mean, just, God, when was that moment of relief? Like, we're finally, you know, finally almost done with this as far as it being, you know.
It came in waves, I think. I mean, one moment was vaccination when they came because we all knew that we needed something because some of us, you know, we had one healthcare worker die and there were doctors and medical staff that died worldwide. And that was always a fear, you know, like going into rooms and wearing everything, especially early. I mean, I remember my heart pounding. I know that sounds silly. I've had some people hear me say that and be like, oh, I mean, why should a doctor be scared of things like that? But you do, because it's very unknown. And you just hope that you weren't the ones. My husband's best friend from medical school died of COVID before vaccination. So that was a relief time. And then just kind of slowly over time, and, you know, Lindsay and I were talking earlier, Dr. Roenick and I talked every day for COVID, like just to kind of both talk about what was new, what was happening, and both to decompress. And so she's been my person of, well, how do you feel? Like the check-in of where are we now? And slowly, the relief of it has been slow. Because every time something happens, you know, we saw an uptick in COVID a couple months ago, and we're just, because the news and the media can be, you know, alerting to what's happening, but nobody knows how bad it's going to be. So it's been a slow decompression.
You think the media has become scared to or nervous about reporting anything to do with COVID at this point?
I don't know. I just know that
it was fear of backlash and scoff.
Well, and I mean, just the whole, I think that was what was difficult about COVID on so many levels. It was polarizing for so many reasons. And so we were just trying to take care of patients, but dealing with a lot of backlash, unexpected backlash from out of the medical community, within the medical community. It was just, you know, you're just trying to do your job, but and let everything else kind of, you know, try not to affect what's happening, but it's hard not to.
All right. Let's take our first break here. We'll come back and, you know, Mark's in the hospital. That's where we'll start off when we come back from this first break. Time right now is 8:48, Community Voice, brought to you by Tanner Health System and Oak Mountain Academy.
Oak Mountain Academy is an innovative school of academic excellence celebrating over 61 years. I'm Patrick Curran, head of school, inviting you to join us on the mountain to see our mission and vision in action. Academic excellence, a faith-based environment, and dynamic opportunities are just a few of the reasons our families choose Oak Mountain Academy. Academic scholarships and tuition assistance are available. For more information, visit us at oakmountain.us. Discover your journey at OMA. Prepare, explore, and achieve.
Health is a journey. It's making better choices, even when it's not easy. It's taking care of yourself and the people you love. At Tanner Health System, we're there for you with every step, with primary care, heart care, cancer care, women's care, orthopedics, surgical services, and so much more. We're dedicated to helping you live and feel your best. So let's get on that journey to health. You've got places to be for many years to come. Find us at Tanner.org.
8:39. Welcome back to the WLBB Community Voice Program, News Talk 1330 FM 106.3. This morning on the News Talk 1330 WLBB Facebook page, if you want to post any questions or comments up there for our guest this morning, I'll try to look at those and share those with our guest, Mark Buchanan, Dr. Lindsay Roenick, who specializes in critical care, internal medicine, pulmonary medicine. That's probably what we're focusing on so much this morning. And then Dr. Larson, Medical Director of Infection Prevention for Tanner Health System. Going back in the I guess it was 3 years ago. It was in the summer of 2020, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, when that happened. And before we left for the break, we put you in the hospital. And not enjoying the experience, but not really, not super alarmed at this point, right?
Yes, I went down, like I said, and I mean, you know, just to get checked because I was scared of, you know, pneumonia setting up and everything. And we, because of my nieces and nephews, and, you know, I went in and, you know, I was on a CPAP, I mean, not a CPAP, but a BiPAP, and then that wouldn't work, and then my oxygen level dropped. I remember they saying that, you know, hey, we need to put you on a vent, and I agreed to go on the vent. And then I think I got better, and they took me off the vent. And, you know, I knew a little bit, but I was still sort of groggy, you know, because sick, it was devastating. It was real, I was real sick. Mm-hmm. And then I guess it dropped again, and they sedated me and put me back on the vent. So,
do you remember how hard it was to get the ventilators at that point? Was it difficult because there was a shortage eventually?
There was a shortage, and fortunately, we never really had to get to the point of selecting patients. That's what we were all really afraid of.
Absolutely.
But no, we never got to that point, thank goodness. I mean, I know there are hospitals.
Yeah. We had a lot of the state allocated ventilators. We had a lot of that. I'm the medical director of respiratory care, so we had a lot of accessibility, so we never really ran too short. We had to use some older machines we wouldn't have preferred to use, but we never were running low.
Yeah. All right, Mark, what do you remember about being at Tanner? I mean, do you remember your wife being there?
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, well, she had COVID at the time, so she couldn't.
Yeah.
She come up some, but like I said, my niece, Jessica Bram, she came in and saw me a bunch, and I had one niece that works in ICU, Brittany Easton, and she, you know, of course, she couldn't take care of me, but, you know, she checked on me and everything and let everybody know what was going on. So it was a big ordeal. I mean, you know, I knew that I was sick, but I didn't know how sick.
I see. But yeah. Do we remember when we realized this was a bigger deal for Mark? I mean,
I wasn't involved in his care till afterwards.
Right. So. I just think when he went back on the ventilator the second time, we knew that he, if he could, if he were to survive, he would have to go to Emory. And at the point, Emory was one of the, probably the only place doing ECMO, I think.
Piedmont.
Yeah.
Emory
and
Piedmont.
And he needed that next level of care because he was young, healthy, surviving, and those were the patients that got that at the time.
And then Emory determined that his lungs were just done. They were just, deteriorated. And what did cause that? I mean, what actually, you know, made it worse than just, you know, somebody else getting it?
I don't think we really know why some people with COVID developed pneumonia.
And I guess what's the process to where COVID did destroy?
Right. The COVID just scarred his lungs down so badly that they just couldn't perform their basic function of getting oxygen in and CO2 out. And Emory, based on imaging and clinical situation, I think advised Melissa and your family that there was nothing else they could do.
Right, yeah, that they actually went to your wife and said, hey, let's make it easy on him and let's just pull the plug.
Yeah,
right?
They said, you know, let's let him die peacefully instead of catastrophic. So, you know, I'm sure I got to see her three times, I think, and I had one nurse, her name was Rose, and I finally got to meet her on FaceTime, but she was, she had an iPad and she would wake me up from being sedated. And she wouldn't sedate me as bad when she was there, and I could FaceTime my kids and stuff. But I mean, you know, I'm so groggy, I could hear them, but I could really couldn't see them. So
yeah. Well, when they offered that to your wife said, okay, well, let me go check his insurance policy and make sure we're taken care of. Right?
Oh yeah, I'm sure she.
No,
did.
No, no, she didn't. No, I she did
not.
I'm kidding, Colin. But yeah, no, she, you know,
she asked you, right? I mean, she did kind of ask you.
Yeah, she come in and she come in that night and before she met with the doctors, and she had old medical staff with her that had met with her and told her there's nothing else they could do, and for her to end my life. And she come in and she said, Mark, she said, I just want to ask you a question, and you know, because I wasn't sedated as bad because Rose knew she was coming up, so it's only the third time she got to see me, and she says, Mark, she says, this is what the doctors are saying. I mean, there's nothing they can do. They're not going to transplant you here. And she says, do you want to continue fighting? I shook my head, yes. And so then she said, do you feel like God will heal you? And I shook my head, yes. So we had a little prayer, which she did with me. And so she walked back out and told them no. And so I think they looked at her sort of crazy when she went out and told them, said, no, we're going to keep fighting. So, and then that's when, you know, God works in mysterious ways, Colin. I mean, I truly believe that. And he had my niece and one of her doctors, you know, sort of touch base. And that's how, it worked out that I got to go to UF.
Well, because your wife went on Facebook, and your niece as well. They were yes. looking. They were asking for help and you know ideas for what to do next.
Yeah, all over Southeast. Yeah, Duke, everywhere. So
then how did you ended up going to Florida? But how did that come about? You see your niece.
My niece works with another doctor in Carrollton, and his brother worked with a doctor that's down at UF. They worked together at Emory or somewhere, and that's how he contacted him and told him I was 53-year-old male. Strong, healthy, and needed lungs, and wouldn't nobody give me any. I mean, no other organs were great. So,
well, how do you feel about that, though? I mean, that they were just. I mean, you kind of have back and forth feelings on the fact that they just felt like, all right, we're done.
I mean, yeah, it hurt, but I mean, you sedated so bad. I mean, you really didn't know. I mean,
And okay, so then, how did you get in touch with Florida? I mean, how did the process start to where they're going to take you down to Florida? And I mean, what kind of approval did you need?
They called my wife and my niece Jessica, and they met. I mean, they talked on the phone for a good little while, and they had to go through an interview, and they went through all kind of stuff. About a 45-minute interview, pretty intense process, I think. And they decided that I was healthy enough, and
You were healthy enough overall or at that time you were healthy enough?
That time that I was healthy enough to be able to fly down to get lungs, to be able to be on transplant list.
Do you remember that flight?
No.
No.
I mean, I did wake up. I was sedated the whole time, and except for light sedation at times when I FaceTime my wife and them. So, when I got down 3 hours later, I was never sedated again until my surgery.
No kidding. So when you got down there, they put out word that that they're looking for, they needed a lung transplant. So that process took a few weeks too, right, to get lungs?
Well, I flew down on October 8th of 2020. Dr. Mashuka and Dr. Pelez both call it like a dry run. They went and the lungs went no good on October 20th. So, that was pretty quick. I mean, you take 12 days and, and all of a sudden, I'm looking at get transplanted. But, of course, they had other people in line in front of me that had COVID also that needed transplanted also. But, I mean, I guess it goes by your chest cavity and different things for lungs or IV and different things. So it was a dry run. It wasn't the right lungs for me. And then I got transplanted. They finally found another set individual that had passed. I mean, that was a donor that I got my lungs on October 28th. Mm-hmm. So just 8 days later.
And unfortunately, you don't know anything about the individual whose lungs are inside of you right now.
No, right? I've written them for the donor and reached out to them, but I haven't heard anything from them.
I mean, and that's all right. I mean, I guess it can be painful for them I'm sure it's good to know that the organ is still being used. For those organs to be transplanted, I mean, the person had to pass from a car accident or something like that, right?
And be pretty healthy.
Yeah.
Good lungs and no infections. So.
Okay. We'll talk about the road to recovery after we come back from our second break. Because I mean, obviously, lost a lot of weight during that process, and a lot of things that had to be taken care of. Time right now is 8:48. Community Voice brought to you by Tanner Health System and Oak Mountain Academy.
The AP Scholar Journey at Oak Mountain Academy is designed to provide students with a clearly defined advanced placement curriculum track to earn a series of distinctions upon graduation. This journey enables academically prepared students to pursue college-level studies throughout 17 AP courses in 5 subject categories while enrolled at OMA. I'm Patrick Uran, head of school, inviting you to journey with us on the mountain. For more information, visit us at oakmountain.us. Discover your journey at OMA. Prepare, explore, and achieve.
Health is a journey. It's making better choices, even when it's not easy. It's taking care of yourself and the people you love. At Tanner Health System, we're there for you with every step, with primary care, heart care, cancer care, women's care, orthopedics, surgical services, and so much more. We're dedicated to helping you live and feel your best. So let's get on that journey to health. You've got places to be for many years to come. Find us at Tanner.org.
Page 49, welcome back to the WLBB Community Voice Program. My name is Colin Worthington. My guest this morning, Mark Buchanan of Rootville. And we have Dr. Lindsay Roenick and Dr. Laura Larson to talk about Mark's triumph, healthy lungs, 3 years after having a lung transplant. Let's talk about the road to recovery. So you've got these lungs, you just wake up, and all of a sudden you can breathe fine, and you hopped out of bed and were ready to run marathons?
No, it wasn't like that, Colin. I mean, it was a process. I lost 73 pounds. I went from 240 to 167.
Is that worth it to get a lung transplant to lose a little bit of weight?
Well, no, you don't want to do it like that. No. So I was so weak and I lost all my muscle, I had to go through therapy. Even before, they tried to get me strong enough to be able to get my lungs, but I couldn't do anything. I couldn't touch my nose or move my arms or legs or anything because I was just, I've been sedated for that long. And so it was a process. And then after I got my lungs, it was still tough. I mean, I went through rehab there, inpatient and outpatient, and then of course I got to come home the 23rd of January and start my rehab here.
That's 22, 21. Yeah. So what as far as your rehab, what does that involve?
Just for me at that time, I mean, just three of them picking me up and standing me up, or putting my legs out of bed and standing me up and sitting me back down. I mean, it's just trying to get your muscles built up and flowing and blood flowing through them. So.
And as far as his lungs, I mean, to have the air capacity and things like that, is it, when he's getting these new lungs, I mean, how workable are they immediately? I mean, do you need to build up endurance for those and kind of start all over again, or?
No, the lungs should be pretty good as soon as they're in. They're usually, they are going to put them in somebody who's his age, height, so they should fit him, and they work.
Yeah, they work.
Yeah.
And then, but the treatment was kind of really just to build up the rest of your body,
build
so that you
strength. Yeah.
And how long did that take?
Well, 3 years, really. I mean, because I still come home in a wheelchair, and of course, I walked a little bit on a treadmill when I was down there, but I was still need therapy. So I went to a set of therapy with Justin Rich in Villarica. He was at the Villarica office, and Justin owns it. And I went, five of them, matter of fact. But I went to him specifically because, he just had to do things and worked and finally got built up where I barely could walk over a little cone. I mean, with this left leg, and the left leg is still has the problems, but I mean, as far as that, I'm still healthy. So.
If you have a sniffle or anything like that, do you get worried? I mean, does anything to alarm you?
It don't bother. I mean,
So you're not telling them, is what I'm getting from this conversation. You're not even really telling them when you, if you do have a sniffle or something waiting a little bit.
Yeah, I have a coordinator in Florida that I still have to speak with, and I do telemed visits every 3 months with them, so I won't have to go down. And so this boss over here, so
she has to see me every 4 weeks, so I'm keeping tabs on him.
I see her every 4 weeks, so I mean, she can tell, and by the spirometry that I do, that the level of my lungs, and if any sort of slight difference,
I mean, I'm afraid I'd be in that same position. I think that I don't want to go to the doctor so I don't find out what's what's wrong, and then I'll be okay, is my theory. That's a good one, right?
But what?
No.
Melissa will rat him out pretty quickly to me. They both have my cell phone. Sometimes they're both texting me different things.
Yeah,
she. But I mean, I can't get away with nothing with them too. So.
Yeah, well, that's a good thing though, right?
He came in about, what was it, a few weeks ago? You came in. He said, I just a little sniffly. Just felt like I need to get checked. And I said, what'd you do yesterday? He said, I played golf. I said, Mark, it was raining and 40.
Well, I go riding the golf cart some. I can't play it much, but I might get out. You got to get out and enjoy yourself.
So. Well, what do you have to look out for now? I mean, are there foods you can't eat? I mean, do you need to make sure you sleep a good 8 hours?
Yeah, I don't eat off buffets. I mean, because I can't touch utensils, and then, because I carry hand sanitizer everywhere I go. And so, I mean, I can't eat off buffets because people, might sneeze or different things on them. And I mean, like salads, I mean, you're supposed to wash them real good and different things. Yeah. And certain things I can't eat, like grapefruit and different things, because of my anti-rejection meds and stuff. So, I mean, there's a lot you had to change. And so,
are you still on any kind of medications that you have to stay on?
Yes, I'm still a good many in the mornings. I take my anti-rejection and magnesium and different things like that, because the anti-rejection eats away at those different meds. So.
And how long? Do you have to be on those for, forever pretty much?
Forever, yeah.
Yeah, so you've got one of those Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday
Fridays,
things.
And Sunday.
But they're this tall.
Yeah.
So you got to stack them.
Yeah, they want me to keep 2 weeks worth of meds out in case something happens. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, this experience, it was new as far as what they called the COVID transplants. I mean, it was new for Florida. Now, I think they're comfortable doing it all over the U.S. just based on you know, he was like one of the top first five people to have this done. So, I mean, all over the U.S., hospitals and doctors are more comfortable doing something like this, right? Because of that. I mean, what was the, why would that be different? Why would the COVID transplant, or COVID, the need induced by COVID be different than any other, like he was a smoker or something like that?
Well, because the smokers haven't been critically ill immediately prior to transplant. So lung transplant is one of the more difficult organ transplants, and it's fraught with the worst rejection, because all your other new organs, you get a new liver, a new heart, they're tucked in and secure, but your lungs are exposed to the outside elements all the time. So lung transplant rejection is the highest, so they're just fraught to more complications. So you want somebody who's strong and healthy. So we might do a COPD patient or some other kind of lung disease patient, but they've been getting regular exercise and they're absolutely tuned up for transplant. He'd been critically ill for months. Mm-hmm. So when you've lost 72 pounds of muscle mass and you're nutritionally deficient and all that, and then to go into transplant, it's incredibly risky.
That that sounds like that was almost as bad as, I mean, the lungs deteriorating. How did you keep, I mean, for those 2 months or whatever it was that you were waiting on that, I mean, how did they just keep your lungs, how did they keep you going? Was it a ventilator the whole time? Or
ECMO,
really?
ECMO and ventilator.
That was it.
The ECMO, you know, bypasses your lungs and just oxygenates you with a machine through your blood vessels, which is really what was keeping him alive, because his lungs weren't able to really exchange oxygen at that point. They were too damaged.
Yeah. Can you understand that you were in bed for 2 months? I mean, was there any kind of mileposts to where you realized, all right, I've been here for a week? Or, I mean, could you watch news and comprehend it, or TV or anything like that?
They sedated me. I mean, I guess I was that bad where they sedated me and just wanted me to rest and rest my lungs and everything.
How difficult is it to find a lung donor?
It's gotten a lot better. I think, gosh, it's been probably 20 or 30 years since they redesigned how they did that. So they have a lung transplant allocation score, and everybody gets literally a score. As it used to be at my center, if I'm the lung transplant surgeon, I just pick who gets the lungs. And that was obviously deemed not very fair.
Yeah.
So they have a very clear algorithm now that spits out who's in what order on the list. But the top 2, 3, 4, 5 people are probably going to get called into the hospital a lot, like you said, for kind of dry runs, where we'll call in 2 to 4 people for every time we get an organ and assess all those people, make sure they're well, see what the organs look like. They might all go home without an organ, or 1 or 2 people might get selected to have those organs. So it's a fluid process.
I don't want to call it black market, but are there private exchanges of organs for somebody? Like if somebody had
not
a bajillion
dollars.
No, I don't mean you're going to dig it out and pull it in, but if somebody had a bajillion dollars and they said, all right, you know, I'm going to pay you for this organ if you donate, you know, your family, like if they just find out, if somebody's notified that somebody was in a car accident, could they couldn't skip over and do that?
I bet no reputable surgeon would be willing to do that.
We got like a minute and a half left. I mean, I guess you guys want to encourage people to check those boxes on their donor cards.
Yes.
For everything. Yeah. Especially you.
Oh, yeah. I do. I mean, it was, I'm glad for the donor, you know, because I wouldn't be here without the donor and all the prayers. I mean, the prayer where it works. But also, right quick, Colin, I mean, while we were at Emory and nobody would help, you know, there as far as finding me lungs or getting me transplanted somewhere or going somewhere else, we got to UF. And some people from Emory did call my wife and, you know, sort of like an advocate for other people that we helped. Now, we didn't, I mean, you know, it was all, but they come down from different places and we helped to get lungs at UF, and some of them's locally right here at Cedar Town.
So. Oh, good. And I bet you haven't been mad at your wife for the last 3 years for anything. I mean, she could probably get away with everything.
Oh,
right
yes,
now, right?
Anything, yeah. You know.
All right. Guys, thank you. And thank you for sharing that story.
Thank you.
I appreciate you guys listening this morning. Community Voice has been brought to you by Tanner Health System and Oak Mountain Academy. Tune in Monday. I think we're talking to the Genealogy Club of West Georgia. And then next Wednesday, there's a nonprofit that benefits first responders. So we'll tune in for those programs next week. Have a great weekend.